This week on Straight Talk Africa, Power Africa, the initiative set forth by President Barack Obama last year will increase power resources and facilities in six African nations to start. They are Ethiopia, Ghana, Kenya, Liberia, Nigeria, and Tanzania. That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa. It's Wednesday, April 9th. I am Shaka Sali.
Well, hello to you, Shaka.
Hello to you, Mariama.
And hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Mariama Diallo, your social media reporter.
Today, we'll discuss the significance of President Obama's Power Africa initiative and examine if it will jumpstart economic growth and development on the continent.
Such a timely topic, and I look forward to spending the hour with our guests and you, of course, Shaka, and everyone who will be watching. Coming up later in our STA inbox, our audience have responded to our topic through your emails and Facebook comments. We'll reveal some of them ahead on Straight Talk Africa.
But first, 9 months ago, President Barack Obama announced Power Africa, an ambitious plan to bring electricity to rural Africa. But where does the plan stand today? And when will Africans begin to see some results? My colleague, Paul Sisco, has more.
70% of the population of sub-Saharan Africa does not have access to reliable energy. And in rural areas, the percentage without increases to 85%. Schools, health facilities, homes, and businesses, everyone suffers. Power Africa, the initiative announced by President Barack Obama a year ago, sets some lofty goals.
Access to electricity is fundamental to opportunity in this age. It's the light that children study by, the energy that allows an idea to be transformed into a real business. It's the lifeline for families to meet their most basic needs. And it's the connection that's needed to plug Africa into the grid of the global economy.
The initiative focuses on Ethiopia, Kenya, Liberia, Nigeria, and Tanzania. In Uganda and Mozambique, the focus is on responsible management of oil and gas. Power Africa is a partnership between the U.S., African governments, and the private sector to bring about 10,000 new megawatts of power to sub-Saharan Africa. Nigerian businessman Tony Elumelu testifying before a Senate committee.
And what this government is doing will be remembered not just by this generation of Africa, but future generations of Africa will remember those who made it possible or played a role in improving access to electricity.
But the U.S. isn't the only country offering assistance to Africa in exchange for potential economic benefits. Jennifer Cook runs the Africa program at Washington Center for Strategic and International Studies.
Many other global players, including China, Malaysia, Brazil, India, Europe even, are making big plays in the commercial and trade domain. And the U.S. has been kind of slow to catch up to that.
It's estimated the program will provide about 20 million households with reliable, affordable power, serving not only to eradicate poverty, but also significantly enhancing economic growth. The $7 billion to fund the initiative comes from several agencies, with the largest commitment, $5 billion, coming from the Export-Import Bank. Another billion will be forthcoming from the Millennium Challenge Corporation. Much of the new power generated will come from energy sources other than gas, coal, and oil, with geothermal and solar plant construction in Ethiopia, a wind energy project in Kenya, hydroelectric partnership in Tanzania, and improvements to state-owned electrical facilities in Nigeria. It's a five-year project, and the six African countries involved have leveraged more than $14 billion in private sector commitments. President Obama's Power Africa initiative is a partnership with the continent that aims to double the number of people in sub-Saharan Africa with access to electrical power. And in so doing, he hopes to help unleash the growth and potential of every citizen on the continent. Paul Sisco, VOA News.
Thanks, Paul, for that report. 2 weeks ago, Tony Elumelu, the chairman of Ayers Holdings, testified to the U.S. Senate Foreign Relations Subcommittee to provide an African private sector perspective on President Obama's Power Africa initiative. Ayers Holdings is a Pan-African investment company headquartered in the Nigerian commercial capital, Lagos. It operates in strategic sectors of industry, including banking, hospitality, agribusiness, healthcare, power, and energy. Mr. Meru's group has committed $2.5 billion to the Obama initiative over the next 5 years. I sat down with him to discuss why he decided to become one of the first investors in Power Africa. I have to say, frankly, that I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to finally sit with you, Mr. Tony Elumelu, and have an interview with you.
Thank you, my brother.
Now, talk to us about what brought you to Washington.
You know, last year, President Obama launched the Power Africa Initiative. And my company, Ayers Holdings, a Pan-African investment proprietary company, committed to invest $2.5 billion. Mm-hmm. We commenced the journey last year, November, with the takeover of the first power plant, where we invested $300 million. And a couple of other refurbishment and expansion programs going on currently. I was, towards in connection with that, I was invited by the U.S. Senate Subcommittee on Africa to testify before them today on the Electrify Africa Act as it relates to Power Africa.
Any particular reason why government authorities in Nigeria have never been able to take care of that, really? Because I remember one time a general, Olusegun Obasanjo, coming to power back in 1999, promising the country and the continent that he was going to be the electricity president, that every Nigerian would have unfettered access. What happened?
We believe the president, the country, embarked on a lot of IPPs, independent power plants. But the outcome is that we did not witness the level of power supply or access to electricity that we expected. The current president, Goodluck Jonathan, I think that statement you made is not truly reflective of the current situation in the country.
Mm-hmm.
So when this government has been able to reform the power sector, the laws and the regulations in that space to make it attractive, to allow private investors to come into that space, and went ahead further to privatize all the power plants in the country in a manner that is truly, truly transparent. So I would say that we're beginning to see a movement towards what we think, as talking as a player in the sector, would ultimately lead to significant improvement in power supply in the country. So I see a progressive action by the government. So for us, for instance, we today own a power plant, and we are the first set of investors in the country to own power plants. It was a government monopoly before, but now it has changed. So I think the journey has commenced, but we need to take it to the next level. We need to sustain what has started and make sure that we're able to continue to nurture the power space, so that power access to electricity will come from increased generation, improved transmission, and the efficient distribution of the power output.
What are some of the challenges that you have encountered so far in doing business in the energy sector in Nigeria and Africa as a continent?
I would say that for us, we have a three-tier strategic intent in growing our power business. First intent is to be embedded and strong in Nigeria. And second tier intent is East and West Africa. And the third tier intent is across Africa. So for Nigeria, where we have just started last year, I would say that so far so good, but the power plant that we acquired has capacity for 1,000 megawatts of electricity. We currently are producing 382, so there's room to do more. And what we want to do is to, we're doing quite a lot already with General Electric and Symbion to make sure that we increase. By the end of this year, we'll take it up to over 700, and next year we'll come to 1,000. Now, we are anticipating that because of this increase in the output, we are hoping that the gas suppliers will be able to meet our gas demand. We also have investment in oil and gas sector, and we have our own oil assets that have huge gas reserves. So when we're starting production in April next month, so one of the things we want to do is to make sure that we use our own gas to fuel our power plant.
Now, when it comes to Power Africa, in your opinion, what is the role of Congress, the United States Congress, in as far as that project is concerned?
I think Power Africa initiative of President Obama is to increase output by 10,000 megawatts and also within a period of 5 years. But Africa is a continent that is going to be there beyond 5 years. And Africa is a continent that actually needs hundreds of thousands of megawatts of electricity and not just 10. So I would think that just like the AGOA Act, if we could have the US Congress help pass this Electric Africa Bill to give a kind of support that will make it last beyond a certain administration. So we shouldn't be talking about just 5 years. But they need to help to unlock and unleash, you know, certain investment funds, capital that can come into this sector to help the African private sector people who want to do more, or even the American private sector that want to invest in power sector in Africa. There's a lot that what the Congress is doing today can do to support. For me, Power Africa is a means to an end. The end point is to improve access to electricity on the continent. So beyond Power Africa, what I think the Congress is doing, you know, and everyone is, how do we increase access to electricity? Power Africa is one of the routes to doing that. There could be other ways. So let's see a policy or a law that can help to unlock the resources and investment to improve access to electricity in Africa, and even policies that can help to improve access to electricity in Africa.
Now, for such a project to succeed, how important is the issue of good governance? How important is the issue of an ethical behavior?
Now, the good governance and ethical ways of conducting business are key for success in any sector. And I would say that we have the level of governance, corporate governance on the continent has tremendously improved. So I do not, of course, even in America, there's still room for improvement in corporate governance. So that's not to say that there's 100% soundness in terms of corporate governance practices. Well, there's tremendous improvement from what it used to be. So the initiative, we need good governance for any good policy to work.
You are supposed to be the originator of the concept of Africapitalism.
Africapitalism is a private sector, a call on the private sector to invest long-term in key sectors of the African economy that have the potential and ability to create both economic prosperity and social wealth. You invest in power, you make money, so that economic prosperity. But at the same time, you're helping to address the power or energy deficiency that we have on the continent. And when you address the energy deficiency, you're helping to create employment, you're helping to reduce poverty, you're helping to even address security issues, you're even helping to address food security challenges of the world.
Well, Mr. Tony Erumeru, it was a pleasure, of course, to have you here on the set in Washington.
It's my pleasure to do so, and thanks so much for this opportunity.
Thanks again to Tony Erumeru of Ayers Holdings. You can see the interview in its entirety on VOA's TV to Africa's YouTube channel or on the social networking website Facebook. Just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa, become a fan, and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. Now we'll pause for a short break, and when we return, we'll continue our discussion on the Power Africa initiative. We'll be right back with you, so please, don't go away.
Power Africa will bring to bear a wide range of U.S. government tools to support investment in Africa's energy sector. The United States will commit more than $7 billion in financial support over the next 5 years to this effort, including the U.S. Agency for International Development is providing $285 million in technical assistance, grants, and risk mitigation to advance private sector energy. USAID will also help governments implement the policy, regulatory, and other reforms necessary to attract private sector investment in the energy and power sectors. The Overseas Private Investment Corporation is committing up to $1.5 billion in financing and insurance to energy projects in sub-Saharan Africa. The U.S. Export-Import Bank will make available up to $5 billion in support of U.S. exports for the development of power projects across sub-Saharan Africa. The Millennium Challenge Corporation is investing up to $1 billion in African power systems to increase access, reliability, and sustainability of the electricity supply. The U.S. African Development Foundation will launch a $2 million off-grid energy challenge to provide grants of up to $100,000 to African-owned and operated enterprises to develop or expand the use of proven technologies for off-grid electricity.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on the Voice of America. For more information, visit our website at www.voanews.com/African Beat.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question. Keep your comment brief and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui, and welcome back. Now joining us here in our Washington studios are three distinguished guests. Kamlan Khan, Vice President of the Department of Compact Operations at the U.S. government's Millennium Challenge Corporation, or MCC, an independent U.S. government foreign aid agency based on the principle that aid is most effective when it reinforces good governance and economic freedom. Chinasom Ejiasa, Director of Private Equity for the Overseas Private Investment Corporation, or OPIC, an independent U.S. government agency that assists businesses looking to invest abroad. And last but not least, Todd Moss, Chief Operating Officer and Fellow at the Center for Global Development, a nonprofit think tank based here in the nation's capital, that works to reduce global poverty and inequality through research and active engagement with the policy community. Well, gentlemen, I have to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled
have the opportunity to host the three of you, by the way, for the first time on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you. Good to be here.
It's a pleasure.
You're most welcome. Let me come to you immediately, Chinesum. What exactly is your role in as far as this recent President's Initiative on Power Africa is concerned?
My role in specific, or OPIC's role in general?
OPIC's role.
So OPIC's role in general is to support via the lending of $1.5 billion into the power and energy space within Africa, within sub-Saharan Africa, I should say. Mm-hmm. And we should also note that despite the fact that there's six countries listed on this, on the Power Africa Initiative, OPIC is actually much broader than that in terms of its impact on the continent. So we're open in largely all of the sub-Saharan African countries. And so our exposure of the $1.5 billion will likely affect and impact more than the six countries that are targeted in the Power Africa Initiative.
What about Kamulan? What about your role, the role of the MCC? Because you would seem to have some restrictions, especially given the fact that you require very, very high standards as far as governance is concerned.
That's correct. We'd like to think of it not as restrictions, but we like to look at it as a framework that allows us to identify the partners who are doing the right things, who are exhibiting the kinds of values that we like to see in our partners, who we feel are deserving of U.S. foreign assistance as it's channeled through the MCC. We have been very active in Africa. We're a global agency, but we've been very active in Africa. We have invested about $5 billion over the last 10 years in Africa in the first 10 years of operations. And we're a key player in Power Africa in that three of the six countries identified under Power Africa are countries that are eligible for MCC assistance. And we are currently preparing new compacts to provide assistance to them in the area of power. This includes Tanzania, Ghana, and Liberia. And our approach to power is very, very integrated and comprehensive. We look at essentially all the ingredients that go into creating a sector that is ready for private sector investment. So, for example, in Ghana, which is the compact that is furthest along in our Power Africa pipeline, we will be helping the government of Ghana to expand its transmission lines and distribution network. Mm-hmm. So invest money to provide them assistance to expand the network, which will increase access to people who do not currently have electricity. Mm-hmm. We will be moving forward with a set of reforms that are critical to make the private investments possible and sustainable. Things like reforming the electric utility, the tariff rates, taking out leakages in the systems, and then third, supporting the transactions that are currently taking place, which are being considered by OPIC, EXIM, our other U.S. government agencies, as well as other private investors like Mr. Alamalu's company. So altogether, we have a vision that is not just 3 years or 5 years. We do need to show some results, concrete results on the ground, as mm-hmm. the president had alluded to. But we also, as he has also imagined, want to help create a continent that over a long-term period has transparency and has a investment climate that is conducive to not only just private investment, but also trade between our two countries, meaning the continent of Africa and the United States. So that's our strategy.
You mentioned, of course, the three countries that you are working with. What about the other ones? We're talking about Nigeria, apparently now the largest economy on the African continent. We're talking about Kenya, another major economic power, and Ethiopia. What do those countries need to do in order to qualify to do business with you?
Sure. So let me answer that question, Chaka, in two different steps. First, MCC is part of a full suite of U.S. government agencies that are part of Power Africa. So each one of these agencies does not need to be everywhere. So part of this process, part of why Power Africa is moving so well is because we're all bringing our expertise and areas of expertise, which may include regional expertise and regional understanding, to the table. So we do where we do best. So in that sense, I just want to make sure that other colleagues of mine, OPEC, mm-hmm. USAID, EXIM Bank, and many others who are working in the other countries where MCC is not. Now, in terms of what does a country need to do to qualify or to be eligible for MCC assistance, that is a very transparent process. Most of the countries in Africa are well aware of what our checklists are, what kind of policy changes are required. We do not make those decisions in-house. We use outside third parties who keep databases of performance of different countries under different policy metrics. And based on how others judge the countries, we then make a decision through our board whether a country has made the kinds of decisions, has taken the steps that make it eligible for MCC assistance. So the three countries you mentioned are probably working on those things, and it's a continuum. Different countries reach that stage at different points in time in their development cycle.
I see. Well, Todd, of course, you wear a different hat. Is this Power Africa initiative the sort of panacea, frankly, that could perhaps lift Africa out of poverty, in your view?
Well, I don't think there's no silver bullet for promoting economic development. But what I think is very clear, and what I think the White House and the federal agencies have come to recognize through this initiative, is that one of the major, and in many cases the number one constraint on job growth, on economic development in Africa, is a lack of affordable and reliable electricity. The data on business constraints is very clear. Electricity is the number one constraint in most countries. And as we heard in the opening to the program, the lack of electricity has an effect on people's health, on people's education, on their livelihoods. And I think it's very, very important that the administration pulled together all of these tools in a focused effort with specific targets to try to help alleviate this problem. And as Tony Alumelo suggested, it's just a small piece. Mm-hmm. The major heavy lifting will come from African countries themselves, but it's very important that the U.S. plays its role.
Well, you recently wrote a piece with one of your colleagues, pretty much suggesting that perhaps this is not the route to take, really. If, in fact, you have to lift a lot of people out of poverty, that perhaps you shouldn't really be focusing on renewables.
Right. So there's a very specific question, which is, what kind of power should Africa be building? Clearly, Africa needs 10, 20 times as much power as they have now, orders of magnitude more. What kind of power makes the most sense for African countries to build? The reality is that the answer to that is going to differ in lots of places. Countries with natural gas are going to want to exploit natural gas. Countries with a lot of solar or wind potential will want to do that. The work that we've done, what we've tried to argue, is that power is so important that countries should be granted the maximum amount of flexibility to provide power for their populations. Now, it might sound very nice to have off-grid renewable solar for very remote, isolated villages that will never be hooked up to a national grid, but there are hundreds of millions of Africans that live in cities, that live in rural areas near transmission lines, and they're going to need big, old-style power plants, and many of them are going to have to run on natural gas and other fossil fuels. And I think we need to recognize that if we put barriers in the way that prevent countries from exploiting natural gas in particular, that we will be reducing the amount of electricity that Africans receive and the number of Africans that gain access to electricity. We should be very, very clear about that.
I see. You're tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment. But first, here is Mariama Jaro. Take it away, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. Still to come, we'll reveal some of the outstanding feedback we've received from our audience through social media. But now, here is our letter of the week.
Lemmy Amasha from Nyeri in Kenya writes, "It is neocolonialism at its best. So the on-off switch will be controlled by the West. What happens if sanctions are imposed or we cannot pay the bills? It's contrary to the beliefs of Pan-Africanism. Africa has enough resources to power itself.
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number 202-619-3111. And the U.S. country code is 1. Call us collect and we'll pay for the call. Or call directs and we'll call you right back. Remember to keep your questions brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you, Esther Githui, and welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. Once again, it's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Mariama Jaro. Take it away again, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. In June of 2013, U.S. President Barack Obama unveiled the Power Africa Initiative, which aims to increase electricity access on the continent by at least 20 million new households. However, some critics say the lack of access to energy cannot be viewed as a roadblock to development, education, and economic growth without examining African leadership and governance issues. Well, this leads us to our question of the week, which asks, will the U.S.-backed Power Africa Initiative, with the goal of expanding the continent's electric grid from village to village, be the best way to develop Africa? Well, let's begin with a comment from Vian Chanda in Lusaka, Zambia, who writes, it's a good step in the right direction, but more needs to be done. Many village dwellers depend on agriculture, and if most of them are then connected to electricity, they will need to be equipped with the proper power tools to irrigate their fields. Farmer input is essential. Another comment comes from Ovi Ukochowera, I hope I'm not slaughtering the name, in Warri, Nigeria, who says, for any country to be industrialized, the power sector must be operating optimally. It is so sad that here in Nigeria, we are experiencing an epileptic power supply. This plan is a shame on our leaders. Why must we wait for the Western countries to help us? Well, Shaka and guests, it's a totally legitimate question, but to play devil's advocate, no one can do it alone. This is a global village, and there shouldn't be any shame in getting help from another country. What's your take on this?
Well, let me take it to my brother here, Chinasum.
No, I agree. I think that, look, the U.S. alone or the federal agencies within the U.S., it's not our role to do this alone. It's not our role. It's a fallacy to think that OPICs of the world, USAID, XM, that these institutions are going to be the ones that support Africa's ability to gain access continent-wide. Mm-hmm. There is a primary fundamental necessity for the African countries to actually participate in this initiative as well. Mm-hmm. Not the Power Africa Initiative, but the initiative to generate electricity within and throughout the entire continent. But that said, there is a role that the U.S. can play and is trying to play via the Power Africa Initiative, but even through other initiatives throughout the various federal agencies. Mm. So I think it's incumbent upon us as humans and people within this society to support, if you want to call it a society of brothers in another continent, and that's effectively what we're trying to do. Mm-hmm. But it shouldn't be misinterpreted that we're doing this alone. It needs to be at the collaboration or with the collaboration of African countries as well.
What about you, Kamalan?
Well, MCC, Chaka, is founded on the principles of country ownership. So nothing we do, whether it's in the power sector or any other sector, is ever done without our partner countries owning the projects and owning the implementation of the program. We, as a development organization, are based on the principle that we actually, whatever the development assistance U.S. provides through MCC, is actually handed over to the countries We develop the concept of what should be done together.
Mm-hmm.
We even do the process of identifying where the constraints to economic growth are together. Then we figure out what should be done about those constraints together with our partners. And in these three Power Africa countries, power is a constraint to growth. That's why we're doing power. Otherwise, we would do whatever the facts tell us. So in these three countries, we know that power is a constraint. Therefore, we're working on power. And then how we actually prepare those projects, that is done together. And then once we have designed the projects, we actually hand over the funds to the countries to implement.
Mm-hmm.
And during the course of the implementation, our model has proved that we build the capacity within the country to actually do this on their own. And through the process, more importantly, we create the transparency and the kinds of structures that are required for the African, for example, workers, professionals, to actually do their job right. One of the things we have learned is that people talk about capacity constraints. It's really, we have to look at two, three layers below capacity constraint word called, you know, this concept of capacity constraint.
Mm-hmm.
Often capacity constraints are created by lack of institutional clarity. And what we have found through our experience over the last 10 years is that once we have been able to provide the clarity, many of our partners in some of the very small countries with serious, quote-unquote, capacity constraints have been able to accomplish very, very astonishing things, build projects on time, on budget,
mm-hmm.
and deliver quality. So that's our model, and that's what we will be doing under Power Africa.
I hear you. Mariama, please share some more of our audience feedback.
Well, Shaka, we'll move on to a posting from Akera Kitara in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, who writes, if the electric initiative comes out of love or as offered to African villages, of course it can encourage better developments. Most of Africa's villages lack electricity. The plan may encourage rural, industrial, and agricultural growth. And let's look at another one real quick with Severino Montana Cortex in Bamenda, Cameroon, who says, with the level of ongoing corruption in the development of Africa, I don't think it will be an easy task fighting for every village to have electricity. Well, Shaka, what do you make of these last two comments? Corruption, of course, remains one of the biggest challenges on the continent.
And in fact, if I remember correctly, the countries that you just mentioned, Tanzania and Cameroon, that's where you have road shedding, as they call it, almost as a norm. What about you, Todd? How do you react to that?
Well, look, every country has problems of corruption. Big infrastructure construction tends to have big corruption problems as well. It's not unique to Africa.
Mm-hmm.
We've got that here in the United States. What I think is important is that the six countries that the administration decided to focus on were not randomly selected. The administration picked them because they believed that these six countries were ripe for where modest efforts from the United States could make a big difference in starting to get a couple of projects going,
mm-hmm.
and to create a path for other private investors, other agencies to come through behind and to really build out a modern energy infrastructure in those countries and to have a demonstration effect with other countries in the continent.
Todd, by the way, those are countries also where the Chinese are very, very active, especially in Ethiopia,
sure.
where they're actually building, you know, electric dams,
yeah.
hydroelectric power
yeah.
on the Blue Nile. How much of a factor could that have been a major factor in terms of how the U.S. government has reacted?
You know, whenever I speak about Africa, I always get a question about China. Look, China's presence in Africa is tremendous. You see them in almost every capital. For the most part, they're coming in building large projects, the kinds of projects that most countries need. And I think for the most part, the United States and China have the same interests in sub-Saharan Africa, which is a more stable, prosperous continent. And we're both looking for security partners and commercial partners. So I really think that most Chinese investment is welcomed here in Washington, welcomed by Washington, D.C. in Africa. There will be an occasion where our companies are competing with their companies, but that mercantilist view is the wrong way to think about development. And the challenge for bringing energy to Africa's population is so vast that there is plenty of work for the Chinese, for the Americans, for the Canadians, the French. We should be welcoming everybody that can bring capital, can bring ideas, can bring different technologies to help bridge this tremendous gap.
I see. Thanks, Mariama, for bringing us this week's audience reaction.
Well, thanks to you, Shaka. And I know I always get on your case when it's all women, and we've had it, like, I think a record 6 weeks in a row where it was all women and only you, Shaka, the minority. So today I am the minority. It's all men. So I just have to mention that before and put it on the record anyways. Well, thanks to all our guests and all our viewers and listeners on the radio, TV, or web. Just a reminder, we love hearing from you, so just keep your comments coming. And if you are a new fan, just drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com. Or post your comment on our Facebook page. Just enter the keywords, Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com, or you can join our YouTube channel. Just subscribe to VOA TV to Africa. Now let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program.
Next week on Straight Talk Africa, World Health officials say the Ebola outbreak in West Africa is one of the most challenging it has ever faced. The virus has already claimed the lives of at least 110 people. We'll discuss the fight to contain this deadly disease next week, right here on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much. Let's go to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers. Good evening, Joseph from Tanzania. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Shaka.
Yes, sir. What is your question, Joseph?
Yes, my question is, this project is very important in Africa. The Power Africa is very, very important in Africa, but I am worried about the significance of this project to the mobile communities like pastoralists of East Africa and Ethiopia and the Horn of Africa at all. I want to be assisted that how can this project Power in Africa can help these communities, because we are talking the issue of poverty reduction and all about making people's life better. So how can this benefit the pastoralist communities in these countries of Africa as part of the African community, to which I target also for the poverty alleviation programs? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Chine, someone, you want to take a shot at that?
Yeah, I'll say two things, I guess. One is, when we approach the Power Africa Initiative, we see it from two lenses. One is we look at it from a generation standpoint, and then another one is an access standpoint. And a lot of what we do is on the access front, in the sense that we realize that there's large cities that need exposure to energy, to power and to energy. But there's also, to the gentleman's point, there's also those who live in more pastoralist types of regions that need access, mm-hmm. any type of access, conventional energy or renewable energy. And a lot of what we've done, OPIC has done in the last several years, has been focused on generating power for those off the beaten path, off-grid communities that also need access.
Rural, sort of rural electrification?
Working
in the rural areas?
Working in the rural areas, who also need access to energy but might not be linked up to the actual power grid system, so off-grid connectivity. We also have a program within OPIC that supports really all of power generation. It's called ACEF, mm-hmm. the Clean Energy Facility, which basically provides technical assistance facility money to every project, but often even smaller projects that need that that first seed capital to do sort of consultative fees and consultative studies to find out just how much energy is needed and how they go about accessing the capital mm-hmm. and the know-how to produce it. And that helps to, in addition to capital, to bridge the gap for those who are on the outskirts of the power grid to access energy and power.
I see.
So we're focused on everything, not just the large cities that also need access to energy.
Let's stay in the same country. Good evening, Alex from Tanzania. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Hi, Shaka. Good evening. How are you?
Usually terrific. How are you today?
Fine, yeah. This is Alex Kasengo calling from Tanzania. Shaka, as you might be aware, Tanzania is one of the beneficiaries for Africa Energy Initiative. And it was last year when President Obama was in Dar es Salaam opening one of the biggest power plants in Dar es Salaam. But we still have a problem, Shaka, in Tanzania. About 70% of the people, you know, live without power. And the government promised us that electricity will be low, you know, the price will be lowered. Now, this time, now it has hiked, you know, and the poor people cannot afford to buy electricity. Now, my question to the panel is how are they monitoring to ensure that the money that they are giving to the project is really working? It's going to the people who are responsible to use that money. How are they monitoring that? So how are they measuring the performance? Can they give us the statistics in Tanzania if the initiative has already improved? Because it's almost a year now since it was opened in Dar es Salaam. Thank you, Shaka.
Thank you so much, Alex. Kamlan, the issue of accountability here.
Sure. Look, we as an agency have been doing this already. In fact, the caller is coming from Tanzania, and in Tanzania, the viewers might be interested to know that the underwater transmission line which connects mainland Tanzania with Zanzibar was financed by MCC. So we know how to get the engineering done, and we know how to work with our partners in the country to get large capital projects done. But I think the question that the caller is raising requires another level of consideration, which is how are the systems, the power systems, being developed and governed?
Mm-hmm.
How much leakage is there? How efficient are there? And to what extent are we able to reach the population that doesn't currently have electricity? And what kind of tariff structures do we have? For example, the lessons that have been learned from around the world in terms of tariffs, what you do is you have the basic amount of electricity provided to all connected population at very low level.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rate escalates very high. So at the time where you, the rich person, has three air conditioners going in your house, you should be paying a very, very high tariff. Versus the poor person who just needs electricity to have light bulb so the kids can study and you can cook. These types of, they sound very basic things, but they're not very basic to implement. And that's the part of the technical assistance and the reform process that we insist upon.
Unfortunately, Cameron, there's no democracy in Studio 52. When they say you go, you have to go. A reminder that you are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. Today, we are discussing the significance of President Obama's Power Africa initiative and examining if it will jumpstart economic growth and development on the continent. If you wish to participate in our discussion, please call us at 202-619-3111. US country code is 1. We'll continue our discussion in a moment, so please, don't go away.
Power Africa will also leverage private sector investments, beginning with more than $9 billion in initial commitments from private sector partners to support the development of more than 8,000 megawatts of new electricity generation in sub-Saharan Africa. Examples of commitments to date include General Electric, which has promised to help bring online 5,000 megawatts of new affordable energy through its technologies, expertise, and capital in Tanzania and Ghana. Hares Holding commits to $2.5 billion in investment and financing in energy, generating an additional 2,000 megawatts of electricity capacity over the next 5 years. Symbion Power aims to accelerate $1.8 billion in investment to support 1,500 megawatts of new energy projects in Power Africa countries over the next 5 years. Aldrich International commits to developing 400 megawatts of clean wind power in Kenya and Tanzania, representing the first large-scale wind power projects in each of these countries. Tariff General Partners commits to $70 billion for clean wind energy in Kenya and $500 million across the African power sector. The African Finance Corporation intends to invest $250 million in the power sectors of Ghana, Kenya, and Nigeria catalyzing $1 billion in investment in sub-Saharan Africa energy projects.
Today's youth are not just the next generation of African leaders, they are today's leaders. And this is the time to invest in them, today, not tomorrow. So let's connect, let's engage with each other on issues that will transform our societies. Innovation, leadership, entrepreneurship, things that you're doing to move the continent forward to make you the greatest generation that Africa has known. It's Upfront every Wednesday, 1730 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
If you like today's show, please write and tell us what you think or give us some suggestions. Be sure to tell us what station you're tuned into. Our address, Straight Talk Africa, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or send us an email at africatv@voanews.com. Log on to our website at voaafrica.com. Or post your comments on Facebook, keywords Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui, and welcome back. If you have just joined us, today we are discussing the significance of President Obama's Power Africa initiative and examining if it will jumpstart economic growth and development on the continent. Our distinguished guests are Kamran Khan, Vice President of the Department of Compact Operations at the U.S. government's Millennium Challenge Corporation, or MCC, Chinesom Ejiasa, Director of Private Equity for the Overseas Private Investment Corporation, or OPIC, and last but not least, Todd Morse, Chief Operating Officer and Fellow at the Center for Global Development, a non-profit think tank based here in the nation's capital. Once again, gentlemen, I have to say that you are profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you.
You're most welcome. Well, we're talking a little bit earlier, Kamran, and of course, I told you that I had to interject because I was given instructions to go for the break. I hope you find some space in your beautiful Pakistani hat. Forgive me for that. could you please pick up from where you left, at least for a minute?
Yes, of course. Chaka, what I was going to say is that MCC, as I mentioned earlier, is going to invest somewhere around $1 billion in the power sector in the three Power Africa countries that I mentioned earlier. And all of our investment will be designed around key policy reforms and institutional reforms, both in terms of how we make the sector efficient, how we expand the access to include a wider set of people who will have electricity, and in the process build capacity, but perhaps most importantly, create the network effect and the economies of scale which are necessary for private investment to flow in. Mm-hmm. Because if you have a limited number of people connected to the grid, it is very difficult to make a financially viable project for a private sector to sell electricity. But if you have a large audience, large number of people who are getting power, then you have a much bigger pool to structure a transaction on. Mm. The key is, do you have the right systems and do you have the right policies? Are you charging tariffs according to what you have in the market, mm-hmm. meaning low tariffs for the basic service, but then tariffs going up? Do you have the right number of people attached to it? And are you able to cut down the leaks in the system? So if it's managed professionally, mm-hmm. if the volume is high, and if the systems are right, you can then attract private capital and get some deals done, not only for the short term, but for a long period of time. This is what Africa needs, not two or three deals in the next 3 years, but a set of deals coming to the market for a long period of time.
I see. Well, Todd, there is a guy called Bjorn Lomborg who happens to be the author of The Skeptical Environmentalist, yes. and Cool It. He also happens to be president of the Copenhagen Consensus Center.
Yes.
He talks about the miracle in China, how China was able, for example, to lift 680 million human beings out of poverty in 30 years. They were able to do that because they had to use coal as the type of energy that they needed. Yes, it is polluting, but it, you know, it actually gives you the results. Is there no such a thing as a sort of trade-off, really?
The reality is that most countries that are now rich became rich by burning fossil fuels.
Correct.
We've done that in the United States. Today, in the United States, two-thirds of our power comes from coal and natural gas. I live in Maryland. 40% of our power comes from coal. So I think it's very important that, you know, climate change is a major problem that's going to affect all of us, and we need to take steps to deal with that. But the problem of coal emissions, carbon emissions globally, the problem is in the United States, it's in Europe, it's now in China. The problem is not in Africa. And mm-hmm. I think it is both immoral and impractical for us to try to fight climate change through putting restrictions on power projects in places like sub-Saharan Africa. Just to give you a contrast, in the US, we have more than 3,000 power plants that run on fossil fuels.
Mm-hmm.
Ghana, one of the countries in Power Africa, has two. Ghana would like to build a few more. We are not going to deal with climate change problems by constraining Ghana from building 2, 4, 6, 8 when we have thousands of plants online. So the source of the problem is with us, and the demand for new energy sources is in Africa, and we need to be sure that we're allowing flexibility for people to do what people everywhere do, which is build the electricity and energy that they need to have modern economies.
Look at South Africa. I mean, without coal, South Africa wouldn't probably be where it is.
Yeah.
And when you look at Tanzania and you look at the huge deposits of gas, what are they going to do with that?
Well, absolutely. I mean, every single country in the Power Africa initiative is either producing oil and gas or actively searching for oil and gas, and they will understandably want to use some of those resources. Some they will export for cash, but they will want to use some of those resources to produce electricity at home. A place like Tanzania, which you mentioned, only 15% of the population has access to electricity. 15%. They have big offshore natural gas deposits. It is unthinkable that they would export all of that and not use some of it to produce electricity at home. And I think we need to be, we in Washington, D.C., and places like London and New York, need to be very careful that we are not being hypocrites and putting barriers in the way of countries that want to do, in the U.S., we have a phrase called all of the above. Mm-hmm. That is President Obama's energy strategy for the United States. That is what all countries will do, all of the above, to provide affordable electricity for their population. We should not expect Africa to behave any differently or to pay for our carbon emission sins.
Thank you so much. Well, on that note, time happens not to be our best ally. Thanks to our distinguished guests, Kamlan Khan, Vice President of the Department of Compact Operations, the U.S. Government's Millennium Challenge Corporation, or MCC, Chenesom Ejiasa, Director of Private Equity for the Overseas Private Investment Corporation, or OPIC, and last but not least, Todd Moss, Chief Operating Officer and Fellow at the Center for Global Development. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, it's Daybreak Africa with James Bate. Also, don't forget to tune in to Voice of America's Africa 54, a 30-minute daily TV magazine program that features what's trending in news, health, sports, and lifestyle. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning in to Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, please. And remember to keep the African hopes alive.